Brooklyn sounds like.
Hey, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. And it's me, Dr. Lisa, the unlicensed therapist. I do give a shit. I really do. How are you guys doing? Are you holding up? I don't know. You know what? I got to tell you something. I'm just going to tell you straight out. I'm fighting depression, okay? I am fighting it tooth and nail. And what's happened to me is that, like, since May, I've been, like, incredibly busy. It's been stressful, but I've done a lot of art projects and performing and back-to-back, and I said yes to too many things. I'm not, like, getting, don't think I'm getting, like, rich or, like, getting any kind of big, like, this is, like, it's nothing major, folks. It's just shit. Okay, shit I'm doing. Nothing major. Let's not get too excited. Although I am proud of the spring break show that I was in last week. Okay. But anyway, with the sex doll, Sky Cleary, then Sherilyn Neidhart and I made work in the voice of this young woman who was actually just a doll. Never mind. I mean, it's okay. But the thing is that I know that on some level, I'm replacing my angst, my existential angst about, you know, all those things, you know, death, my relationships, my health, which is good, you know, but all the things, my dog is old, my dog is not well. I mean, I really need to buy new clothes. All my clothes are worn out. I need to clean out my closet. I've been like repressing everything, and now it's all come to a head. Plus, I have to figure out what I want to do next creatively, where I'm going. So what I want to say is that I'm normal. I mean, if you're normal, I'm normal. Okay? So if that ever happens to you, that's what happens. There's nothing wrong. I don't think there's anything wrong. I think it's just what happened. Anyway, I'm getting into psychotherapy head because I've got somebody here that we're going to do a psychotherapy session together. He has never been in psychotherapy, so he's a... I was just going to say sitting duck, but I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say He's awesome. He's going to be a great patient. And we're talking about Nick Greenwald, who was in Spring Break as well, a Brooklyn artist, and is a major talent. A major talent. He draws incredibly well, and he draws fantasy, kind of dark, very creative, very complex, mostly black and white scenarios. Anyway, he's a really interesting guy, and I'm very excited that he's here. And but you know what? I want to remind you before we get started that you're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, which is the greatest radio station in the Western Hemisphere. Because I don't know about the Eastern Hemisphere. I've only listened to the ones in the Western Hemisphere. So that's, but I can tell you. So anyway, did you know that we're a nonprofit and we, you know, it's getting to be the end of the year. Let's look at it that way, folks. And with all that money you have, you need a tax deduction. I know that everything's gone great for you this year. You need a tax deduction. So go to radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate and check us out. But even more importantly than that, sign up for our newsletter. Become part of the organization. We're back. We're having a party this Saturday, 2 to 4 on the rooftop here at 199 Cook Street. We are interesting and we are fun. I also want to remind you that it would be great if you were thinking about going to the, I want to remind you about the Peter's Valley Annual Craft Fair, which is this weekend, the 24th and the 25th at the Sussex County, New Jersey Fairgrounds. You can browse and buy like tons of crafts by exhibiting artists, and it supports the Peters Valley School of Craft, which is a very important organization, you know, because we're not getting enough art in our schools and in our lives. And not only that, who doesn't want to own something that's handmade? Christmas is coming up. You can give it away. Okay, so don't forget about that. So I'm going to bring on my guest, Nick. Hi, Nick.
Hello.
Put your face closer to the microphone, please, or put the microphone closer to your face. We started out in a good,
Is that a little
anyway,
better?
How did I describe your work? What do you think?
I think you did about as good as I do.
You did.
Sometimes I fumble. There's a lot of different things you could probably say and different ways you could describe it. And sometimes I do good and sometimes I do bad, and I think you did fine.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm more concerned with accuracy if represented it.
Relatively accurate. I think there's an element of comedy also. There's some slapstick comedy and silliness.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point because it's fantastical and it has a darkish element.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got like that lovely sinister ha-ha.
One of those things I think that's important to me is like taking dark and, you know, depressing or horrible elements in the world, and you have to filter them in some way that you can like, you know, make digestible. And the silliness and the comedy is a way of like looking at things that are sometimes too horrible to, you know, consider openly, or I don't know, maybe it's a defense mechanism or something, but. It's a way to look at things more clearly.
You know, I'm going to say that I love that it wasn't actually that we're talking about it, but it wasn't the first thing, because the comedy is very deep in there, but very insidious and subtle, the way I like my comedy.
I like to hear that. Thank you very much.
So it's right in there. So anyway, we're going to have a conversation here, but just so you know, Nick's Instagram is Hey Look Thunder, in case I forget. Okay, Hey Look Thunder, all one word on Instagram if you want to see the work.
Look for thunder, but you're actually thunder. How do you look for thunder? That's my little
is that the little secret
secret subtle joke that isn't very funny.
How do you look for thunder? You can't look for thunder.
That is the ultimate element of it. Also, Thunder was my old wrestling name when I used to be a backyard wrestler.
Oh, backyard wrestler. Does that mean you got in school fights?
No, all the fights were outside of school. All the fighting was done in the backyard.
Right.
People avoided
other students.
With other students.
Yeah? Did you get in a lot of fights?
No. People stopped fighting with us because they saw that we were beating each other up more than any bullies could probably ever do. So we were hitting each other with tables or chairs or
really? Anything. Did you get hurt?
I did a lot of martial arts when I was that age. So I was kind of like beaten into shape. I think that I wasn't badly hurt ever. I broke my nose once, but that's about it.
But you liked the physical conflict.
Well, it was like physical theater, you know, because it was very staged what we were doing. There was some element of improvisation, but we were trying to be like the WWF.
But it wasn't like you were like beating up kids you hated or something.
No, it was me and my friends all just smacking each other around for fun.
Kind of like watching puppies play, right?
I think there was a large element of that. A lot of my friends were like big puppies, and I was the little puppy who was getting thrown around. Hmm. So when you said sitting duck, I think I have been a sitting duck more than once.
Oh, well, you're not a particularly small man.
Well, I was a lot smaller back then.
As a child.
I was smaller back then.
So we all were, weren't we? I started out at 7.5 pounds myself.
Although all my friends were also, maybe I wasn't small, but all my friends were very tall, big. Some of them were large, very large. So I was the runt of the litter of a very large group of people.
Well, you must have really developed skills then and tenacity.
Yeah, for sure. Learning how to be thrown around and not get, you know, grievously injured, definitely.
Yeah, that's who people really want to have fights with, people they can wrestle with people they can throw. I mean, how much fun is that?
Yeah, it's a lot more enjoyable, I think.
So let's get into the therapy thing. So I'm just telling these guys, listen, you guys, so here's the thing about, here's what I know about Nick. Nick, okay, I don't know Nick. I don't really know Nick. I don't really know Nick. I have a good feeling. I have a great feeling about Nick. I know Nick's a great, talented artist. I know that. I know that Nick does not live with his girlfriend. He's been with her for 5 years. She wants to move in. He doesn't. So that's interesting, right?
Mm-hmm. There's a story there, I think.
Also, Nick is a little bit obsessive, I think. I think, you tell me, Nick, but I think you're sort of obsessive with, like, fantasy and... I guess you like those, you know, Lord of the Rings stuff.
Oh yeah,
all that.
Lord of the Rings is like that's like the gateway drug.
You're obsessed. You know all the, Marvel comics. Comics.
I'm
or
not
more
really a Marvel guy.
Marvel, or I don't know enough about it.
It's a little too mainstream.
Marvel's too mainstream. So who's your hero?
I think there's an artist named Mobius. He's a comic book artist. He died in 2011, I think. He's a French comic book artist and just unbelievable talent, the draftsmanship and the creativity. And he very much inspired the way that I think about making my work.
Interesting. Seeing he's really deep into it, folks. I've never even heard of this person. But
look him up. Mobius is very, he's very,
he's probably
famous,
very famous if you're into that.
In those circles. Exactly, exactly.
I have enough trouble keeping track of my grocery list, so I'm not gonna get into like a whole new genre of art, but so you get the picture a little bit. He's
in fantasy,
really fun guy. He's great at like hanging out and talking. I can tell that right away. He spends a lot of time working. He loves his art. He's alone in his studio a lot. We found that out in the preamble, but he's never been in therapy. So let's see what the story is. So Nick, what do you think is like been on your mind lately that you could discuss?
In terms of my biggest issue with my
what's been bugging you?
Okay, well here's one. I got contacted after spring break. This is, I guess, it's relevant to what we were talking about before in terms of my reticence to be an art world entrepreneur type person.
Mm-hmm.
I got contacted by a curator from China who really, really responded well to my work. He came to my open studios because Bushwick Open Studios was
He
DM'd me and made a point of coming to my studio, wanted to, you know, chat about the work. And then he emailed me yesterday and was asking me for like my general info, CV, bio, all that stuff.
Congratulations.
And said, you know, I want to consider you for a show in Shanghai where I have a gallery.
Wow.
So issue, this is not to brag. The issue is I haven't really had any shows in the last couple of years because of, you know, COVID and what we were saying about how I, you know, I've kind of drilled down into my studio.
Okay. I was questioning Nick why his work wasn't more widely dispersed and why he wasn't promoting it and stuff like that. I mean, I was just curious. I think Nick actually just really likes making his work. He has a good job. He gets paid to
decorative painting.
Decorative painting, but you know, like Trompe l'oeil, like high end, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure.
In the houses of the rich and famous, murals and gilding and all that.
Yeah, he's got like a great gig. He has, you know, representation, but he works for himself, so he's getting paid to use his skills all the time in a very highly specialized way, and he likes working alone in a studio. So he may just be self-satisfied like where he is, which is fine, but this is what we wanted to find out. Yeah. So Nick is now confronted. You're confronted.
Yeah, I feel a dual pull between, I have a lot of satisfaction from my job. It's relatively stable, though there's moments of, you know, moments when it's very busy and I have lots of work, and there's moments when I have, you know, I'm kind of
like
scraping
by. Like any freelancer. Yeah, but you've been doing it like 10 years.
I've been
something.
Doing it for 10 years, so I've gotten kind of used to thick and thin.
You're moments. In there, and you get good word of mouth. That's established. We got that going.
Yeah,
on.
But I think the dual pull is, you know, maybe there's a space for me to maybe try and step more into being a professional artist and displaying my work and making more of my life money, you know, the stuff that I sustain myself on from making art. And well, there's a professional element of it that I don't think I'm fully prepared for or invested in or have.
Okay, first of all, you are a professional artist. Your work is professional.
Mm.
You've been shown, Spring Break is professional.
Sure.
So you are a professional artist. We're talking about your career. We're not talking about the work. We're talking about
exactly the career. Yeah, career.
So you have conflicts about putting your art out there. You're conflicted about it.
And I think there's a bit of that, yeah.
And what do you think that's about?
Well, I think there's an element of, I think there's a lot of fear and anxiety from trying to put this thing that's so personal to me into a space where people judge it in a business way or a marketability way. But, you know, losing the art and getting more of the business and is something that I think I have a lot of questions about.
Mm-hmm. First of all, there's two things I'm thinking about. One is what the conflicts are, of course, but also the way that you talk about it is interesting because on one hand, you're talking about in terms of money and like showing your work isn't necessarily about making money.
Right.
We all know that. Like,
of course, yeah.
You know, those are two different things, but in your mind, they seem to have.
I think that it's in the service of money. Yeah, I think I conflate it with this is in the service of money because I have to, you know, talk to curators and galleries and tell them prices and try and sell it, I guess, make an effort to sell it. And once there's that element of it, it stops being about the studio and making personal work. And,
so you've personally, some people don't, you know, show their work. They don't think about the money part. So
sure.
You are personally, the money part is personally something that affects you.
I think that's an anxiety inducing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure.
And are you worried about are you worried about being criticized? Are you
not
worried?
At all.
Okay.
I don't think that has ever, because I take criticism when it's art based criticism, you know, that's all part of the process.
Yeah, and I'm sure as your job you must, I mean, that's part of being,
yeah,
you know,
you
when you get
have,
paid to do the
work.
You can't
have an ego when you're making you're doing the artisanal work.
Yeah, because of course.
It's either right or it's not right, and then you have to make it right. That's
right,
the job.
Right. And then people, you can make it right, and people might not like it anyway, but you're a professional.
Yeah, you have to be a professional. And in terms of criticism about artwork on the walls, I have a very similar
So you're view. Professional. So then yeah. What... do you feel vulnerable? Everyone feels vulnerable putting their work out there. What part of it, like, are you concerned about the image? Like, what part of it do you feel vulnerable about? You're confident about the work.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not confident in myself in the entrepreneurial sense, in the trying to sell myself sense. If all I had to do to sell work was talk about art the way I like to talk about my work, then I could probably do that. But I don't know. Is there conflict there? Can you do that?
Well, I think that you know, like with this gallery in Shanghai, that guy's going to be selling the work. You have nothing to do with it. He's already. I mean, I don't think the artist necessarily has to be good at selling their work.
Mm-hmm.
They have to make work that people. I mean, to really get, you know, collectors and galleries, you
right.
pretty much. Do have to at some point make work that people will buy.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily have to have anything to do with selling, with your ability to sell it. You put it out there. This is when I'm, you know, you just put it out there and people respond, especially nowadays on Instagram and stuff like that. So, but you're anxious about it. So what do you imagine, like, what do you imagine that when you talk... You talked about, like, if you could talk about it the way you want to talk about it, but that in order to sell yourself or your work, and I'm not clear which it is, you can't talk about it in the way that you're comfortable.
Natural to me, you're
comfortable. Natural. And I want to hear about that. Like, what do you imagine?
Sure. Well, when I imagine me talking about my work or interacting with my work the way I want to, I mean, there's something that's very holistic to me. You know, there's something personal. And I guess I feel like once it enters into the realm of business and being sold and, you know, collectors and all that stuff, I think there's an element where you start to lose that. At least it seems that way to me. I mean, I'm so far on the periphery of that, it's all speculation. So maybe that's right, what the anxiety is. I haven't really done it much.
Well, it's. I mean, it's real. We're talking about what's real, and you know, what's real is what's real for you right now, and mm-hmm. that what you're thinking, what you're thinking about. Who cares? I mean, down the road, it may seem completely different, but mm-hmm. right now, that's what you're imagining. So, what about your work that is really personal? You must, I mean, if I can ask that.
Sure.
Well, so there must be some really personal relationship you have with it.
Yeah, I think that the personal relationship is that I see my work as an investment of time and self. You know, I spend all my time in there making the work, and it's just, I think it documents the passage of time a lot because it takes so long for me to make individual works, and so much of my thought, you know, daily thoughts find their way into the work. And I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's necessarily important for other people to know about. I don't know if it adds anything to, you know, the marketability or the sales price of a work. But when I think about selling the work, I'm always like, how much time and life did I invest into this? If does that make sense?
Well, yeah. He's giving me a funny look. Am I looking at you in a quizzical way?
I'm
thinking
it,
about it.
It's kind of a thing I've said for, I'm saying it kind of for the first time in a way, like out loud. You know,
in a literal way, and you're what a reaction.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to express because
not at all. I mean, I think I understand what you mean because your work. And guys, really, you should go to Hey Look Thunder, and so you know what we're talking about. Like Nick's work is black and white, but the imagery and the quality of the drawing is very specific and very technically professional. I don't know how to describe it. It takes a fucking long time, more than people realize, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
And do you feel that you can't get paid for the amount of time or that people won't appreciate, like...
I think a bit of both.
And so, like, let's say, you know, take a typical piece that you can bring to mind that took your that you're talking about now mm-hmm. that took a long time and has like sort of a lot of your life moments in it, mm-hmm. right? So how much do you think you could sell that for and how much would it be worth to you? Like if you could, how much money, is there any amount of money that would compensate?
I think we're drilling down to part of the issue is that, yeah, it's hard to put a price on that for me because I mean, it's personally priceless. But I can put it in units of time, you know, the way that I do my job, hours mm-hmm. per day or, mm-hmm. you know, man days per mm-hmm. job or something. I can put prices on those because I know how to budget, you know, I know how to budget my daily hours of work in an artisanal way.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, putting a number on it is easy to do in abstract, but, you know, personally, it's kind of a weird thing to do. It feels weird to do, even though I know it's...
So does it feel weird to do because you're reluctant to get rid of, to give up the work?
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely. Okay.
Because I'll just tell you really quickly about this artist, Joe Coleman. Do you know who he is?
No, I don't. No.
He's somebody worth looking up. He's a painter. He does, you know, very elaborate imagery, mm-hmm. similar to what, you know, you would relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And he only makes, I don't know, maybe three paintings. He only makes a few paintings a year, and he has a relationship with everyone that buys one of his paintings.
That's what I would like very much, yes. Like, that's a major fear of mine, is to give a piece away and never hear from the person again.
So how long, is there any amount of money? I mean, I know it's not, I know no one's going to pay like $10,000 for a drawing by you. I mean, not that it wouldn't be worth it, but mm-hmm. would $10,000?
Oh yeah, that is the price I set at for my spring break drawings.
Uh huh.
And I was not intending to sell them. That was the price that I said.
Did anybody take it? I mean, that's a lot for.
I think people took it seriously, but I don't think anyone was going to buy it.
Right.
Which is, I mean, that's okay. But I think if someone paid that, I would also want to make an effort to keep a relationship with them if I could.
Mm-hmm.
And that's majorly interesting to me.
How many drawings do you produce a year?
Like five or six, maybe. But there's always the studio drawings and sketches and other stuff along with that. But a finished piece, I would say maybe 5 or 6 pieces finished a year. Things I would consider like fully rendered the way I'd like them to be.
And the other things, could you sell those for like a couple $100 or something?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I have, when I did my open studios, I had a variety of finished, you know, fully rendered pieces. And then I had a bunch of sketches on the wall, which all were like $300 to $500 or something.
Did you sell a lot of those?
No, but people were interested. You know, yeah. There were some inquiries. And the gallery, the China guy, emailed me after the spring break was over and the studios were over.
Right. So what's wrong with selling those? Because you also have to put the other one up for sale.
Yeah. Yeah. That I feel less of an issue with because those drawings are less of an investment of time and less personal.
Right. We have something that you are happy or comfortable
selling. I'd be more
comfortable
selling. But, you know, those aren't really the things that people are blown away by. You know, those don't get as much interest, I think.
What do you do with the ones that you have, the finished ones? Where are they?
I just keep putting more and more on my wall. It's like, it's become sort of like, you know, mental mansion.
Do you like that feeling of being surrounded by them?
Yeah, I love being surrounded by my work, for sure. But I like having like a blank wall or two, but it's nice to, the process of making my work is responding to my own work. You know, one piece informs the next, and the next, and the next, and the next. Because they have a very narrative, there's a narrative structure, but it's very loose, and it's freewheeling. You know, I look at one piece and get inspired by it, and, you know, the characters or the ideas in that one or the settings go to the next.
Next one.
Yeah.
So,
it would be scary to have a blank wall and all my work had been sold or put in a show somewhere.
You're really emotionally attached to your work.
I think so.
Well,
are other people not? I'm not sure.
No, not everyone is. You're emotionally attached to your work because it takes you a really long time to do. And I'm not really sure. Sorry. I'm not really sure why you're so attached to it. I mean, don't you have any old... What about your older pieces?
There's a lot of old work on the wall, but some of it, there's too much, so it just goes in boxes that are in my studio.
And what about selling those?
I think I'd be more okay with selling those. The longer I haven't worked on them, yeah.
Are you happy with them?
Pretty happy, yeah. I think that I've gotten closer and closer to my vision as I've gotten older and done more work and stuff. But the older work, I think, still is a pretty good representation of what I was going
so
for.
So you could sell those.
Sure. I wouldn't mind.
So what do you think it is? Like, how did you start making work? How did I start? Yeah, like the work that you're making now, like what we're talking about. How did you start making art?
Well, I started drawing when I was a little kid. So, you know, years and years of just doodling in notebooks or making drawings, and my parents were both artists, and they both were, you know, they weren't totally okay with me going to art school, but they supported me once I, you know, once I almost flunked out of being like a physics major or whatever.
Did your parents make a living as artists?
No. When my dad was younger, he was like an illustrator, but they both have gotten jobs, now they're retired now. But they're pretty supportive of me now. But the series of work that I consider my, you know, adult work came about when I felt like I was at a mental block and I needed a narrative or something to invest myself in that wasn't just staring at the wall and drawing, you know, figure drawing or still lives or whatever was inspiring to me. I wanted to have something I could invest myself in that was like a long-term project that felt like it was endless. There was always going to be more of it. And I could, you know, go back to the well and always dredge up more. And that revealed itself to me because of, like, my interest in comics and narrative storytelling and fantasy and role-playing games and all that sort of stuff. And realizing that that was a major part of how I use my brain when I'm making art is the same kind of thought process.
So you're sort of living in a story land, sort of?
When I'm in the studio, for sure. Yeah, it's a little
fantasy. So it's almost like reading a book, except you're drawing a book. You're drawing your own book instead of writing a book.
Yeah, and it's a choose-your-own-adventure book, which is fun. Because I don't always know where it's going to go next, but looking at what happened before is the information for it.
So it's really, really satisfying.
Super satisfying, yeah. A lot of myself, you know, what makes me, you know, what keeps me relatively free of personal problems, I think, is a lot of what goes on in the studio and lets me work it out in there. I think that is why I probably am so attached to the work. There's an element of self self-satisfaction and problem solving that was in mm-hmm. the part of the personal experience of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously,
what about a print? What if you like? Why isn't a print okay?
It's not okay. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Print you hadn't thought of that.
I mean, it's a consideration.
But you could get yourself a nice print.
Yeah, I guess I could. Well,
or you could sell a print. You could sell prints, but you could also get yourself a nice print.
I could get myself a nice print. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more of I just need to have the entrepreneurial go-getting attitude to
it. What is the idea? This is so funny. You know, I mean, I remember you're 33.
Yeah.
But I remember one time somebody wanting to sell, I mean, this was like a really big installation of gifts from men and shit like that.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't want to show it unless they could put it up for sale.
Sure.
And I remember not wanting to sell it.
Uh-huh.
But those are actual gifts for men. I mean, but I do remember reading somewhere or somebody saying to me once, I think it might have been the late, great Annie Herron saying, don't hoard your work.
Mm.
And I think that is really good professional advice.
That is good advice.
I mean, it's good advice. And, you know, it's kind of like maybe it's a discipline to sell your work. You know what I mean?
I haven't thought about
why,
it that way.
You know, don't hoard your work. And now when I look back on the work that I have, I mean, I'm still glad I have that piece, I think, in particular. But, you know, I used to feel like I wasn't going to be able to make anything that good again. Do you ever feel like that?
I think that there are, like, high watermarks in my work. But I don't get intimidated by that, I don't think.
Yeah, that's not part of it for you.
The part that's interesting is what's going to happen next, you know? So I feel engaged in a way that doesn't make me scared that I'm not going to make something as good as before. But I do try and keep cognizant of, like, where have I gone and how much have I done?
So something that's interesting is you use the word entrepreneur a few times. What does that mean to you? You don't think of yourself as an entrepreneur.
And not in terms of my fine art making, no.
Do you think of it in terms of your, your job, your work, art?
I have dabbled in getting my own gigs and getting my own clients. Didn't go that great. And I think that I fail on a lot of levels when it comes to getting work, getting jobs myself.
So you've gotten, say, hurt, or you've had bad experiences.
I've had some bad experiences. I mean, some okay experiences, but...
Because right now you have negative. Kind of like an agent getting to work for you.
Yeah.
And exactly. Vouching for you
exactly.
And making the deals and... Or negotiating the money.
Or it's word of mouth with other coworkers who have their own gigs or something like that.
Right. So you have somebody already telling them that you're a great guy.
Yeah, exactly. I think that I get very...
Tell them to call me. I'll tell them.
Yeah, sure. Maybe you can give a reference.
So, I mean, I think, you know, that's a great... That is, I think, you know...
I think there's a link in those professional problems.
Uh-huh. So, do you have a story about, like, one of the things that was very upsetting? Can you tell us a story about something that was upsetting when you tried to get your own work?
I won't use names, but yeah, I had a client, and I'm not very good at standing up for myself when it comes to, like, getting the money that I think that I should be owed. And when it comes to working for this other company, you know, there's a precedent, and we have sort of a comfortable process for getting paid and how work gets, you know, compensated for. And then when you're a free agent on your own and getting your own jobs, and I think maybe this links to fine art, you have to set your prices and talk to your clients yourself and get paid for what you think you're worth. And if there's a conflict there, you have to find a way to resolve it yourself. And I'm not great at that. That is definitely...
So you hate talking about money?
I am bad at talking about money. Yeah, I think I am. I think the reality of money scares me, and capitalism is it. Something I have a major issue with, and then the reality of it, you know, staying alive with the money that I have to get is a real challenge for me sometimes.
Yeah, because, so that sounds really normal. It sounds very normal.
I guess it is.
But what is it about money? Tell me how you learned about money and, like, how you feel about money, and what happens, like, with your girlfriend? Do you guys split everything, or is money an issue? Do you wind up in discussions about money?
I think that I am as well off as I could be, and I don't worry about money very often, which is great. I mean,
that is great.
I don't think I have a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I have found ways to survive and, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
money's not a problem for you.
Money's not a problem in terms of spreading it out and surviving on it. But, I mean, there's always the element of, you know, should I be trying to get more? Do I need more?
Do you feel like you should be?
Well, I live in like a cardboard box sometimes, it feels like. It's very, you know, I think I could live in a nicer apartment if I had more money. But, I mean, I'm very comfortable. But, yeah, I mean, maybe there's an element of I'm 33. My friends are starting to make more money than I am. I don't really get jealous or anything. But I think it's just self-assessment, you know. And there's the question, should I be getting more? Do I need more? Is what I have right now not enough?
So do you think that your self-image and has something to do with money is a reflection on how you feel about yourself or how you your role in society, being a guy and all?
No, I don't think that I ascribe to that at all. I think I understand that, but it's not something that bothers me. I think it's more it's the overwhelming weight of knowing how much I'm going to need over the course of my life. You know?
So you think about how you're going to have to earn like $100 million in the
exactly.
next 40 years.
The overwhelming weight of how much money over the course of my life I'm going to have to earn. And seeing in the immediate moment how much I have and how much I know I'm going to make for the year. And then, you know, extrapolating from there. You
so
know.
You're like, when I'm never going to be able to retire?
Probably no.
Oh, you're worried about like being like homeless when you're 65 or something?
I mean, more like
so,
55, yeah.
55. Let's talk about what was money like? What was the role of money in your household? Like, how did you...
Growing up?
Yeah.
You
have brothers or sisters?
I'm an only child.
Okay.
It's an interesting question because money wasn't something I was super cognizant of as a kid, but mm-hmm. I was aware of it in the sense that I knew my parents had to give up their, like, art careers.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Or at least that was the fantasy in my head. I don't know. My parents never said that to me. They didn't make me feel bad or anything. But,
Did you wish that they had been able to be artists?
Absolutely.
That's what you wanted for
I
them.
Wanted for my parents to be artists, yes.
And
absolutely.
They just didn't have the time because they had jobs.
They had a kid. They had me. And I felt that very deeply, that I was the thing stopping them from being artists in a way.
Really? And they didn't put that on you?
They didn't. I think I put that on myself, yeah.
Do you think that was some kind of projection, like you wanted to be, you don't want that for yourself, or you were afraid that you wouldn't, that money was going to be a problem and you wouldn't be able to be an artist because you wouldn't have enough money? Did that?
I think then in a very basic childlike way, that was a thing that occurred to me. Yeah, for sure. But because I have a relationship with my dad that's very good, and my parents both very good.
Yeah.
I love my parents. And okay, here's a childhood story that maybe is relevant to the,
sure.
the therapy overall.
That's what we're looking for. This is exactly what we're looking
yeah,
for.
Yeah, your question led to one that popped
okay,
into my
let's,
head.
Okay, let's do it.
When I was a kid, every day my dad, you know, my dad's a union electrician now. He was. He's
retired.
He's union. Yeah, retired.
He got a
now.
Pension.
Pension, all that great stuff. So I'm very happy for them. They're retired. Both my parents are retired and doing great. So I'm happy for them very much. But when I was
Me too.
A kid, when I was a kid, I'd wake up every morning. My dad had already gone to work. He'd wake up at 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, take the train to Manhattan and, you know, go and be an electrical engineer, you know, telecommunications, whatever. But I'd come home. I'd come in downstairs every day, come to the table where I'd eat breakfast. And my dad had drawn me like a notepad full of drawings. So there's a new drawing every day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
Oh, my God. God.
I think that's a very deeply ingrained thing, like everyday drawing and everyday doodling, and you got to keep this like sense of, you know, there's a sense of creativity. So my dad didn't really do art when I was a kid, but he always had like a sketchbook. You know, I have, you know, I don't know if he still has them, but they were like sticky note things, like thick, full of drawings every morning of our cat or like the food bowl.
And
or,
he would give them to you and
he'd
then
leave them for me to find them
and
every
did
morning.
You, oh, like around the house?
On the table when
oh,
I was going
and
breakfast.
Then did you save them or did he save them?
I mean, no one threw them out. I would never throw them out.
Okay.
I think they're at my parents' house.
Okay.
But I
that's beautiful. Wow.
It's something
what a great way to connect with kids.
I mean, it's something I loved about
kid.
My dad.
Yeah. I love that about your dad.
I associate like doodling and sketching with like a connection to like my childhood self for sure. Mm-hmm. And when I think of drawing with kids, that thing I get a lot of joy out of, like when kids come to my studio for open studios, I want to draw with them or mm-hmm. whatever. That's it's a very like satisfying and, you know, I get a lot of joy out of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's an element of it. Like my dad isn't here and this is all he's like left.
Right.
And there's an element of like, this is as much art as my dad gets to do. And that was like a weird feeling for me.
So here's what's interesting to me is hearing this is that you somehow decided or felt that he wasn't, that was his way of doing art, but it wasn't enough for him. You felt like it wasn't enough. Why did you think that?
Well, I think my dad's a very creative guy. And I think that now in his retirement, like he does photography, he'll doodle all the time. He posts his, you know, photos on Instagram. Because I think deep down, my dad is a very artistic and creative person. My mom is too.
Right.
I think my connection is deeper with my dad's relationship to art.
So do you feel that, like...
And they both taught me to draw when I was a kid.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've got a lot of skills, a lot of genetic skills. It looks like that to me.
Well, training,
that you do.
I think the training came from my parents. Like, they like when I was three, my mom would, like, teach me to draw and, like, show me, like, I'd be drawing, like, weird dinosaurs with lasers, and she'd be like, okay, make another one. And there was this encouragement to make art from them.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I was just like a weird little kid and had anxiety.
But you had anxiety? What's the feeling of anxiety?
No, that was the anxiety, was the feeling that my parents maybe gave up some element of their creative life for me, which is, you know, that's touching, but also like I wanted them to have more for themselves.
Right. You know? But maybe you wanted more. Did they ever say anything like, I love it. I mean, I find it so, I don't know, endearing is too... is not the right word, but there's something really special about a child looking at their, you know, hearing you talk about your dad that way as a child. I mean, that's just heart. Isn't that amazing, guys? This is a regular guy saying something emotional. Wow.
Well, I'm pretty
I have to make fun of him.
Person.
I have to make, it got too heavy. It got too heavy.
Is it heavy?
I couldn't take it. So anyway, the thing is that, so, what I'm wondering about is, did your parents, were you frustrated for them, or did they give you any feeling they were frustrated that they didn't have more time to do their own work?
As a kid, maybe there's, I mean, kids are pretty perceptive, so maybe it was not an intentional thing.
It was there.
In my kid brain, I thought, I recognize that my parents have some frustrations with how, you know, the hindering of their creative life or whatever.
Uh-huh. Did they argue about how they spent their time, like you pick them up or any of that? Like,
I don't,
the responsibility of you?
I think when I was very, very young, like 3 years old, I had some worries that my parents were going to get divorced. There was like I remember fights as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, looking back as an adult, I'm like, they were probably just normal fights. And I was just
being anxious.
I was being anxious, emotional.
Yeah, and you didn't have a brother or sister, you were really dependent on. You know, like you don't have a brother or sister to like talk to about.
In terms of logistics, my parents were pretty on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
They knew they there was never fights about, oh, you have to take care of him now or something.
But let's get back to, you know, we only have 15 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to solve all my problems.
No, but I do want to. No. Oh, come on. We've got 15 minutes.
Oh, okay.
That's, you know, it's, you're only 33. How many problems? We can get through this. So anyway, entrepreneurial.
Yes.
So
that was where we started.
I'm just like, this to me, I see the frustration. I mean, I get that, but that doesn't necessarily tell me why. You are concerned about making enough money.
Mm. Well, I know how much money that I make from my job, or I have a general idea of how much money I'm going to make over a year. And thinking about trying to sustain myself more from my artwork than my decorative painting work, it's hard to imagine a world where I can kind of reach a similar level of.
Right, but it's not a black or white thing.
Right.
And you know what's kind of ironic? You're talking about that you're afraid that you won't be able to sell your work, but you're at the same time, you're also saying you don't want to sell your work.
Yeah, these are two problems at once. But I think they're
so they're really conflicting problems.
Absolutely, yeah. I think there's a conflicting issue.
Have you ever like given a piece of work away that you don't know what happened to it, that you're upset about or something like that? Has that ever happened?
I have sort of coping mechanisms, and one of them is that for Bushwick Open Studios, I draw for everyone who comes in. I'll draw business cards for everybody,
mm-hmm.
and they're all unique. I have one in my pocket.
But, oh, okay.
The whole point is
showing it to me.
The whole point is here's like.
This, am I going to get this?
You can have it.
I can have it. Okay. I'm going to put. I'll post this. I'll
yeah,
post
that's
it.
Sort of a Freudian phallic turtle picture.
Yeah, it's a guy with a turtle, but there is a sexual overtone. I'll give you that much.
Anyway, the point is that it felt like I'm doing something important by letting go of some drawings. You know, mm-hmm. they're small, but I invest some time into them. A little bit of time into them.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that anyone who wants one can take one. And free. You know, I'm not selling them or anything. And the idea is everyone has a little piece of me, you know, on their fridge or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or in their pocket.
Do you feel like your work, like that people can't love your work as much as you do?
I would like if they could. But I'm not optimistic that they would.
But it matters to you.
It would be nice.
But how much does that matter? Like, what about your girlfriend? Does she have any of your work? And you guys don't live together. That's a whole other story.
I have made lots of drawings for her.
I got to get you both in here and figure that one out.
Yeah, we'll be back for another.
You're a real
session.
Introvert. You don't want to live with anyone, is that right?
I live with someone right now. He's my roommate.
Yeah, but that's not your. That's not your.
We have separate lives.
Do you want to have kids? No, maybe.
The world's too horrible, I think.
No, you don't want to. Anyway. So, have you ever given her a piece of work? Do you have any feeling?
Of course, she has multiple of my drawings. Yeah,
but
absolutely.
What happens if you guys broke up?
She can keep them. I don't want them.
You don't want them.
I already disconnected the emotional. Someone it's out there, and she has it.
She loves you, and she loves your work.
I'm
so
glad that
she
does. Yeah,
she's worthy of it, or she
absolutely.
You're secure with her having it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an element of worthiness, but yeah, definitely I'm okay with someone having it for sure.
Yeah.
And I've sold work before. It's not like I've never sold a piece. But I think that I try and remember where all of them are. You know, there's this feeling of maybe one day I'll have to contact the person who bought my work and say, can you put this in like a show or something like that? Would you be okay with displaying this even though it wouldn't be for sale
mm-hmm.
or something?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't want them all gone forever from me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting because you're kind of really caught in the middle.
Yeah.
Do you worry that if you somehow didn't have that strong of a connection to your work, that it wouldn't be as good? Are you worried about having an emotional distance? In order for you to give your work away, you need to have an emotional. You need to create an emotional distance.
Definitely, I would if I was going to sell more of it for sure.
But are you afraid that you won't be able to do that? Or that if you start doing that, you won't care? Like maybe you have an emotional distance from your art, let's call it artisanal work or whatever, mm-hmm. your trompe l'oeil work.
Yeah.
So you have an emotional distance there.
I have no connection to it, no.
And are you afraid that you're going to be like that about your other work? Or do you think maybe your other work allows you to have the emotional distance with your professional work? Like what? Is there any relationship there?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so, really. But I do think that it's hard for me to create that emotional distance. I'm not afraid of it because I've sold the work before and you know, I'm okay now. I haven't, like...
No, nothing's happened.
I didn't die on the inside or anything. So
you're still wondering about it, though.
Yeah, I think about the piece. I'm like, oh, I hope I can get a photo of it hung on the wall in this guy's house or whatever.
So is that part of the reason you're not promoting your work?
I think that there's an element of that. Maybe there's a deep down, there's like a childlike fear of that at a very low level.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if that's the major roadblock.
Do you have any idea?
I think the major roadblock is being being a guy outside of the studio trying to sell the work, like being a professional in a selling setting rather than being the artist who's allowed to make art in their studio by themselves or
so right. You picture, how do you picture, so you picture that you're going to be the one literally selling the work
I think
to the collectors.
I think at some anxious level, like underlying me, yeah, there's a part of me that thinks about that. Yeah, like, oh, I have to like go up and like sell this. How am I going to sell this to somebody? Yeah, I think there is a part of that, even though I know it's not true.
Right, so because you'd have a gallery or somebody else.
Gallery or curator or somebody, but yeah. I think there's a piece of me that feels that way.
Then
I picture it that way.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know if there's an answer for that. Just not
no,
like that.
No, I'm just trying to like figure out like what's real and what isn't. I mean, some of your reticence in selling the work is genuine because A, you're not making the work because it's not about the money. You're not doing it as part of you're not counting on income from your own work.
Right, exactly.
So that's, and it takes forever to make it, and you can't possibly get paid for the amount of time that you put into it. I'm certain of that, right?
I don't think that there's a way I could.
That's not what it's about. Most artists don't.
No, of course not. I don't expect that from most people. No.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be unreasonable of me to demand that from somebody yeah. Anyway.
This is going to be, that's the third of my year. That's
yeah, it's going to be
$30,000 yeah, exactly. For this 12 by 12.
I'm not drawing. There yet, and I don't think I will be anytime soon.
Well, it's not what, you know, it's not realistic in the in the world we live in.
No.
So what I'm trying to figure out is this is what I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about if you're afraid to confront the reality of how people respond to your work, the role of your work in the art market.
Yes. I think you're very close. I think you're pretty close to something.
And what your real growth potential is and how people are going to respond in a scenario that likely you won't have a whole lot of control over. You can't say this person's going to buy it, that person can't.
I think you're right. I think that that's a good way of putting it. There's a fear. I think I do have a fear of spreading my wings, sort of. There's an element of that.
Finding out the truth.
Yeah, that is really frightening. The idea that I could put it all out there and actually commit fully. And still, I would fail, or someone wouldn't respond the way I'd hope they would, or something.
Oh, so it's real fear. It's not that you're hoarding your work.
Well, there's a fantasy fear, which partially is hoarding, but I think there is also a real fear, which is, a fear of, trying to realize my full potential and probably not achieving it the way that I would hope for.
And do you see, like, your parents as people who didn't, they didn't, I mean, they had a different life.
Yeah,
they had you. What a pleasure.
I hope so.
So they had different visions for what they wanted. But do you feel frustrated on their behalf? Do you feel
a
like,
little? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's a personal fantasy of mine that everyone I meet could potentially be an artist or draw or have a creative outlet. And I want to see the guy, like the guy sweeping the street or the guy working at the deli be a secret painter or something. And it frustrates me that more people don't get to realize.
But why do you want them to do what you want?
Well, I hope that what they want to do is something that is creative, but maybe not everyone has a creative spark to them, but.
Well, not everybody wants to spend their free time drawing.
Yeah.
Or making art.
Well, it's not drawing. I mean, it would be,
maybe the
deli guy is doing performance art behind the counter or something like that.
Yeah, but it's really interesting because, like, you have a relationship with your work, but you also have a relationship with the idea of art making that you don't want to get people your work. You want them to make the work.
Yes.
You want them to make their own work.
Yes, 100%.
And
yes.
That's not... The word that comes to mind is I'm going to say, I think maybe that's some unfulfilled fantasy.
Yeah, I agree.
Having to do with your parents not being successful as artists, quote unquote artists.
I think that could be it. Yeah.
I think that you're mourning that.
I think that's
possible. And I think that maybe you feel guilty. Maybe you feel pressure to like be successful for them.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe your art, your relationship with your art, I think, has an emotional connection with your feeling about your parents.
I think that's, you could probably say that about a lot of artists.
We got 5 minutes.
Okay, yes. No, I think you're right. I think you're
No, I think for right. you, because I'll tell you how I feel about my work, and this is what I tell people.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I look at my art.
Mm-hmm.
Your art is your children, and I make all the decisions based on, are they my, like I would if they were my kids.
Mm.
Are they going to be comfortable in this house?
Mm-hmm.
Are they worth this thing? Is this an ethical person who's going to be selling the work?
Mm.
Is this, am I making too many sacrifices? Am I not making enough sacrifices?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I look at everything as if they are my children that want to be out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm feeling like you're looking at your children like they're, like your art is your parents' grandchildren.
That's a really interesting way to put it. Yeah, maybe. That's an interesting way to think about it. Yeah. Yeah, I think you might be close to something.
I don't know. So what your parents are obviously supportive, but like how invested are they in your art? Are they, I mean, they may not, I mean, this is coming from you. I don't get it coming from them. It's all about you and your wish for them.
Yeah.
But are they playing into that at all or?
I don't think it's really a thing I've talked with them about.
No, but do they say, did you sell any art? Did you make any art?
They're always asking how I'm doing professionally and how my work's going. They come and see the studio and just visit.
Yeah, but do you feel any pressure from them to sell your art or that you could be selling your art or be nice or any of that? Do you feel?
I think I try.
Or is that a question? Is that an active question between you and your parents?
I think it's an open-ended question.
Why aren't you selling your work? Are you going to that kind of stuff? Do you talk about that with them?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Like what kind of conversations?
My dad often has professional advice for me in terms of selling work or ways to promote myself.
Okay. Bingo.
Yeah, I think I think that your dad
is putting, that's confusing. We can't.
Yeah, you need another hour, I think.
No, I think that boundaries, here's what I'm going to say because we only have 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that I think that if you could somehow let your dad know that, you know, you do want to work on selling your work, but it's a very personal issue for you and like discussing it, like you want to do that on your own and that discussing it is confusing for you.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good advice.
And that you really appreciate it.
Yeah.
And that everything they, you know, like it's not about that. It's just that you really care so much about his opinion that it's influencing you.
Mm.
And that in order for you to really move forward, you want to take a break and that you'll definitely, you respect him. You want to know if you have a question.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's the best advice I've gotten in a while on that topic.
That's good. See, now you need to go to therapy.
Maybe a little bit of therapy helps.
See, okay. Well, anyway, that's great. I'm very excited to, you'll invite me to the solo show at...
Yeah, you're invited to Shanghai.
Chelsea in Shanghai. Yeah. This is very exciting, so... anyway, thanks so much for listening to Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. I'm on Radio Free Brooklyn every Thursday, 2 to 3 live. And you can go to our archives and at radiofreebrooklyn.org. Check out all my over 300 shows. I think this is like the 310th show here or something like that. And I think you should stick around because we've got amazing programming this afternoon. So don't go anywhere, okay? Also, I'm going to be at Chilo in Greenpoint tonight, doing therapy and giving